There are fewer than 30 men in the world qualified to drive Formula One. A mere half dozen, perhaps, to win. At this moment, I'm inclined to think you're not one of them.
No, you want to.
Keep up the good work, and there you have it. There you go. With the qualifying.
Welcome to F1Weekly.com. My name is Clark Rogers. I'm the host of the program. I'll be joined by Nasser Hamid, my co-host. This is podcast number 998, June 26th, 2023, Nasser.
Thank you, sir. I say Dennis Hopper had Tales from the Crypt in the palatial studios of F1 Weekly. Today we present Tales from the Trip. Back to you, Senor.
Thank you, Nasser. On today's program, Nasser Hamid reports from the UK and Italy. Dominic Cali says, 10 teams is plenty. We don't need any more teams in Formula One. Did LCH actually ask for a 10-year extension on his contract? And Alpine gets some heavy-duty investors from Hollywood. And this week's interviews, Hugo Yugochukwu, sponsored by McLaren, I believe, awesome driver, and Arvid Lindblad. NAS will have all the details and more from Europe in just a moment. We need your contributions. Yes, ladies and gentlemen, we must say this. We need your contributions to keep this program alive and bubbling at the top. Just click on the Support F1 Weekly button right there on the front page. You know you'll want to. NAS, I know you're pumped up, you're tired, you're motivated, you're full of adrenaline. You're now, right now, in Italy. You've been to the UK. You've been to Monza. You are living motorsports.
Thank you, sir. I have to say, since I'm in Milano, greetings and gelato regards. And I did have some mango and ananas gelato yesterday at Parco Monza, so that was fun. Like you mentioned, also UK, so greetings from Zuropa. Arrived in jolly old England last week, and past Thursday, F1 Weekly's medical doctor, Dr. Mark, and president of F1 Weekly European Operations, Mr. Brazier, and moi, we went to Silverstone Museum, which is a new museum at the circuit. Now, going to Silverstone, Mr. Rogers, as you know, is a special feeling, birthplace of Formula One racing. Among the cars, I have to say the collection of Formula One cars is not as big as it used to be at Donington. And I was hoping some of those cars will be there, especially cars from the 50s and 60s. But it's still worth the trip, and I really enjoyed the trip and the company. And among the things they have is they have the Red 5 or of Arnage. DC's Silver McLaren is there, and Damon's Williams is also there. And there are cars from other series also, like British Touring Car Championship, which I have followed for as long as I have followed Formula One. So that was good. And there are some motorbikes also. And anytime you see a bike from Mike Hillwood, Barry Sheen, or Giacomo Agostini, that's just very, very special memories for me. But Mr. Rogers, the real kidney pudding was the video at the end called The Ultimate Lap. Now, just this video, and this is my personal opinion, is worth the trip. What it does, it shows famous moments at Silverstone from days gone by with actual commentary, such as Mansell, you know, doing his incredible high-speed pass on teammate PK when they were at Williams, with rubber meeting rubber close to 200 miles per hour. And plus, of course, that famous picture we've all seen, Mansell giving right to his BFF, Ayrton Senna, when his car stopped, I think, on the last lap or a lap before. So this was the way it's put together is very, very nice. It shows in-car camera, videos, slow motion, just absolutely fantastic. And we also did a drive-by of the new Aston Martin team facilities, and of course access not allowed, which was understandable. But I think I saw a man at the young man at the entrance, not sure if it was Lance, but he was holding a sign saying, "Daddy, I love you." You think it was Lance?
Definitely Lance. All of a sudden, reality is going to set in pretty soon. They want a driver that's going to give Fernando some competition.
Yes, reality for Lance starts with M. M as in machismo. Now, you know, some years ago, this is of interest to you, of course, before the British Grand Prix, Machismo drove the Ferrari that gave Scuderia their first championship victory at Silverstone in 1951. Then on Sunday, Machismo drove his red machine to victory, and that was a very special weekend for fans of motorsports, regardless if you are a fan of Alonso or not. And Sir Peter Revson's victory in the 1973 race remains the only American success, not only at Silverstone, but throughout the entire history of British Grand Prix, which has been going on every year since 1950. And before the arrival of chicanes at Silverstone, it was and still is one of the fastest tracks in Grand Prix. And this is one of the few tracks, and kind of like Monza, where there is no elevation changes. This is as flat as a pancake at IHOP, but it's still a great circuit, even with all the changes and curbs and, you know, dog legs they have now. The final word on Silverstone trip is delicious. As you know, no trip to England is complete without a trip to Spicy Curry House, and Mr. Brazier discovered a new one in Milton Keynes, which we all enjoyed. And sir, then, courtesy of EasyJet, I came to Monza, Milano, Malpensa, Saturday night. And, you know, Mr. Rogers, F1 Weekly does not allow excesses like Ritz-Carlton and renting a Mercedes-Benz. But this time, Mercedes was running a LCH special. It was podium-less pricing. So I'm riding around in a nice Mercedes diesel model, which is a very nice vehicle. I like it. And that's what I drove to Maranello. Now, Sunday morning, I went straight to the track, which is about an hour ride from here. And there are some very talented drivers in the Formula 4 Italian Championship this year. And I had an inkling that, you know, the problem these days is when a driver is with the driver program, they need the approval from the teams. So I had an inkling that something like that will happen and I may not be able to do any interviews. But despite last minute request, I was able to speak to two of the leading contenders, and both are Mr. International. The young man leading the championship is from Surrey, England, Arvid Lindblad. He did a Verizon triple play and won all three races of the weekend. Now, in the second race, he was second. He was beaten by American kid Ugo Gochukwu, but then Ugo got a penalty for exceeding the track limit, so Arvid got all three wins. Now, Arvid's papa is from Sweden and mother is of Indian origin. He is in the Red Bull Junior program, which means he is in the good hands of Dr. Helmut Marko. The other kid, Ugo Gochukwu, he is in the McLaren Driver Development Program and he is from New York City. His mother is from Nigeria and Papito is from Milano. I had a nice chat with his mother also. She is keen to see her son's achievements and name, more well known in the US while he is based and racing in Europe. Now, Ugo, I don't know if you've seen his picture outside the car. He is a tall driver. He actually reminds me of Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. We wish him all the best in dunking the competition in 2023 and beyond. And shall we roll his interview with your express written consent now?
Yes, sir. Let me just do a layup real quickly.
Ugo, as he told me, is the first American to win European Karting Championship, which is very hard to do and, of course, a great achievement. And I have been following his career for a few years now. He has been very good and successful in the karting. And last year he raced in the British Formula 4, was a rookie champion. And this year he has moved up to the Italian Formula 4 Championship. And he's racing with the Prema team. And I think the future is very bright for him, where they develop racing drivers the way they should be developed, not pushed through like a freight train or an abattoir like Red Bull. So I think the future is very bright for this young kid, and hopefully I will see him race again in the near future. So please enjoy our conversation with Ugo Gochukwu from New York City.
Okay, folks, I'm at a very hot Parco Monza with a hot young American talent, Mr. Ugo Ogochukwu. Ugo, good to meet you. How are you and how is the weekend going?
Yeah, I'm doing well. Overall, it's been quite a solid weekend. Some cases wanted to go a bit better. I managed to get the win on track yesterday in race one, which was good. We were really quick. But unfortunately, I got a time penalty for exceeding the track limits. So a little bit disappointing to lose all those points, but I just try to keep focus and focus on this morning's race, which went well as well. I managed to pick up a podium again, P3. So those were definitely some important points that we'll need for the championship. And yeah, overall it's going quite well.
I watched the race on web yesterday. I think you started 7th, a very impressive performance. When a young driver like you gets a win taken away, how long it takes to get over it?
Yeah, definitely. Starting from P7, I wasn't expecting to make up so many positions. But the slipstream is really strong around here, so I just tried to prep my moves as much as possible. And I knew the speed was really good, and our qualifying position didn't show it. So I just tried to focus as much as possible. And when I got in the lead, I just tried to defend my position for the last two laps. But yeah, as you said, getting the win taken away is a bit disappointing at the moment. You know, you get real frustrated because there's important points you need. But I think you just have to leave it in the past and just try to focus on the next races.
Yeah, and I say it better happen in Formula 4 than in Formula 1. That's how I look at it. Okay, you are in McLaren Driver Development Program since 2021. Please tell us how this deal came about. Did you call Zach Brown or did they call you?
Well, they called me. I had a very good karting year in 2020. I managed to win the European Championship. Yeah, first American to do so. So at the end of the year, McLaren said they were interested in me. And yeah, it was quite a quick signing. We, of course, were such a prestigious team like McLaren. We felt it was a great opportunity that we had to take. So yeah, I got on board with them at the beginning of 2021.
I've interviewed Zach Brown a couple of times for our podcast. He's a real cool guy, nice guy. How do you find working with him?
Yeah, definitely. Working with Zach is great. I'm learning a lot of things from him. Already met him a couple times in real life, and I think we have a good relationship together.
Okay. You won a karting championship in the U.S. at the age of 7. Where is the interest in motorsports coming from? I was talking to your mom, and she said not from her.
Yeah. So my dad used to race karting, but I think I've always enjoyed like cars. You know, I used to play with little cars in my house, or like my dad's friend is really good with Sims, and I used to play when I was like 3 years old, you know, on the F1 2010 video game, and from there I really enjoyed it, so I wanted to give a go in real life. And the first time I tried a kart was in Oakland Valley in upstate New York. And I really liked it, and I wanted to go back the next weekend. And we found out there was a race that weekend, which was going well. I was leading the race in the kid karts, but unfortunately ran out of fuel. Didn't have enough fuel in the kart. But from that point on, I really enjoyed it, and I always wanted to go back.
Running out of fuel in karting is the first I've heard, but again, better in karting than Formula One. Okay, you mentioned you were European karting champion, and by the way, we've been reporting on your success for quite a few years now. Is the racing scene in Europe same as in US in terms of driving talent and on-track behavior?
Yeah, I think there's definitely a lot of talent in America as well, but maybe some people don't fully, truly know, but definitely coming to Europe was a chance to prove the talent, a chance to prove that winning in the US meant I can do it over here in Europe as well. And I think that's what allowed me to get on this path and be such in a good position, let's say, in F4.
Okay. Last year you were 3rd in British Formula 4 with 2 wins and 11 podiums. Overall, happy with the results and performance or disappointed that you did not win the championship?
Of course, the overall goal is to go for the title, but in general, I think we were quite happy with the season. Being my rookie year, I had a lot to learn going into single-seaters. Of course, changes a little bit from cars, so overall was happy getting so many podiums throughout the season, and I think just gave me that good experience for this year.
Okay. okay? Now, the transition from karting to single-seaters, I spoke to a lot of young drivers. Some say it was no problem, say it took some time. How was it for you? Easy peasy, or it took some effort?
Well, definitely, like, getting in it straight away was not an issue, because I feel like when you have that feeling in karting, you know, you have the feel for the kart. It's quite similar in cars. So you can get on the pace quite easily. Of course, there are other things you have to learn a bit more in detail, like tire management and especially race management. Like, the racing is much different. The cars are much bigger. So it takes a bit to get used to. I think it's quite similar for everyone.
Now, both in karting and single-seaters, have you ever employed or worked with a driver coach?
Yeah, I work with the driver coach now, and I think it definitely helps. You know, you can make sure you're thinking about all those stuff you need to focus on, point out any errors you're making, or just try to make you improve in general, I'll say.
Okay. I'm sure goal is to win the championship this year. Who do you see as your main challengers for the title?
Well, yeah, the goal is definitely to go for the title. We know the pace is there this season, so I just need to perform. And yeah, at the moment I'm P2 in the title. Probably Lindblad will be my toughest competitor. He's been quite consistent up to this point, and he's also a good driver. So I think it'll be quite a close battle until the end.
Now, has Mr. Brown given you any goals or targets to achieve this year in terms of number of wins or something like that?
No, there haven't been any specific goals throughout the season. I think just wants me to go out there, not too much pressure, you know, just do the best I can. And we're sure we'll be able to pick up many wins.
Okay. Now, when you go to a racing track where you have never raced before, how long does it take to get up to speed and feel comfortable with the track?
Well, yeah, I'll say that's one of the things that separate the good drivers from the great drivers, you know. Going to a new circuit, you need to do as much prep as you can before the weekend. Really try to, you know, watch videos of previous drivers, figure out braking points, and really learn the track. So when you get there, you can be as close to the references as possible and get up to speed as quickly as possible.
Are you friends with Logan Sargeant?
No, I don't really know him well. He's a bit older than me, so maybe one day.
Okay, you've come a long way from the U.S., doing very well here in the U.S. What is your advice to young American karters who also aspire to make it to Formula One?
I would just say you need to work hard, keep focusing, and I think just really do the best you can in each competition you can.
Okay. Can you tell us a little bit about yourself outside the world of racing, your interest in music, food, and coming from New York when it's time for Monday Night Football? New York Giants or New York Jets?
Coming from New York, I spent most of my childhood there. So I'm still really close with New York. I go back a lot. Of course, now I'm based mainly in Italy. But I usually go there a lot in the off season, so it's good. But I'll go with maybe Giants.
Good. Okay, finally, how about a message to our listeners? Can you tell them about your social media so they can follow your career?
Yeah, so you can follow me on Instagram, Ugo Gachuku.
Thank you so much.
Ugo, thanks for joining F1Weekly.com. Back to you, Nasser.
Sir, Monday morning, I was in Museo Ferrari. More beautiful bodies here than a bordello in Bangkok. Driving time from Malpensa Airport area in Milan is about 2 hours. I was really looking forward to see the first Formula One Grand Prix winning Ferrari from 1951, which happened at Silverstone. Unfortunately, sometimes you just have to live and learn. And what happened when I got there, I did not see any of the cars that I was looking forward to, 50s, 60s, and especially like Niki Lauda's championship winning car, because I was a huge Niki Lauda and Ferrari fan back in the day. And another car that was just beautiful and I wanted to see very much, if not the exact car, but the 1978 Ferrari 312 T3, in which Carlos Reutemann won the British Grand Prix at Brands Hatch. And also the 126C2, which was used in 1982, was another beautiful car designed by Dr. Harry Postlewhite. And that car was on pole position when I attended my first Formula One race at Monza in 1982. and a gentleman who was not racing in Formula One full time was drafted last minute, and he put the car on pole position. And as I told the driver some years ago, hearing the F1 announcer say, on pole position, Mario Andretti of the United States, will ring in my head forever, because I never thought somebody being out of race. I mean, I knew how talented the guy was, but I thought coming back and racing against the Renaults of Prost and René Arnoux and Brabham of Piquet, that he will not be on the front row, but Mario was on pole. So that was very impressive. So none of these cars were there. So, but that was a disappointment, but it is still a trip worth going there. And when I asked the gentleman, what is the deal here with these cars? And he said what they do is they feature a certain era for a full season, and their season changes around September. So he said, if you come back in September or October, it will be, he said, we change everything, the display, the historical information that is there. And there is a lot of information there, which I really enjoyed. So hopefully, you know, I have a plan that my next overseas trip will be somewhere in, you know, late January or February. Maybe I'll come back again to see more cars. And Italy, like England, is motorsports no matter where you go. And just for information, if anybody is interested, the museum entry fee, at least today, was €22. So that's like $25-$26, not bad. And there is $1 parking per hour. And it's in a easy to get there. And I thought it'll be like away from everything, but it's surrounded by buildings and businesses and residential areas. But a nice area. I really enjoyed it. And they also have some production cars. You know, anything that is Ferrari is beautiful, gorgeous, and super bellissimo. Mr. Rogers, do you have any plans to come to Maranello and go to Museo Ferrari?
Absolutely, Nass. Once I get the Saudis to contribute to F1Weekly.com to be part of that big sports empire that they're building as we speak, yep, I'll be on my way.
That is very good, sir. Now, among the cars they had there were, of course, the era was basically 1996 to the present. They had the 1996 Ferrari, which took Michael Schumacher to his incredible victory, his first in a red machine in Barcelona in heavy rain. Surprise, surprise. If somebody has not seen this race, and I only watched this last year because I was traveling when the race took place, that performance is absolutely, you have to see it to believe it. I mean, the guy was at like fifth or sixth at the end of the opening lap, and he took time to pass each driver, but man, once he took the lead, he was total adios. Very, very impressive. Now, the first championship that he delivered to Ferrari, which was their first driver's championship since 1979, when Jody Scheckter won the championship, was also there. And they also had a Gilles Villeneuve Ferrari from 1981. And that car, and of course, the name of the driver, number 27, that sure brings a lot of memories. So it was all very good. Really enjoyed it. You know, I'm not regretting that I was there just for a day, because they also have an Enzo Ferrari Museum in Modena. You can also do a trip to the Fiorano test track. You know, they have all these. But now that I am a beneficiary of full-time retirement, hopefully I can come here and spend some more time, quality time. And I just don't want to go to a place and say I was there. I just want to soak the environment and the atmosphere and really, really enjoy it. So it was all very good. But sir, we have some other information coming from the Formula One world. Drivers wanted. Audi, which is part of the VW group, has signed Neil Jani as their simulator driver. His Papito is from India and used to own Wendy's franchise in Switzerland. And this he told me himself when we met some years ago at the Po Grand Prix. Neil has been part of the Porsche racing family, which is also part of the VW group. Once upon a time, he was in the Red Bull program and raced in the Champ Car series here in the USFA. And he also raced for Team Switzerland in A1 GP. Are you surprised at his selection?
How could I be surprised? I mean, he's always there. He's the obvious selection because he's being paid. They thought, well, why don't you get to work there, Neil baby? So yeah, not surprised at all. I mean, I think they went for convenience. I take it they didn't want to go online and check Indeed.
There you go. Next, we come to Show Me the Money. Bahrain State Investment Fund, Mumtalakat, is buying preference shares and warrants worth 400 million British pounds, which is about $510 million, in McLaren from Saudi Arabia's public investment fund and Aris Management. This has been reported by Sky News, so there's more money coming to McLaren. You remember some years ago they sold their building, McLaren's Technology Center, and are leasing it back. Not sure if that was the right move, but that's the way things are. Next, more money. A team called Hi-Tech Racing started in 2015 by ex-racing driver Oliver Oakes and based at Silverstone is currently racing in Formula 2, 3, and 4. The parent company Hi-Tech Global Holdings has announced it has sold a 25% stake to Kazakhstani businessman Vladimir Kim. We shall call him Vlad the Racer, if not the Impaler. He is the president of Kaz Minerals and is worth around $5 billion, US dollars. I wonder if he has a teenage son who wants to be Kobayashi of Kazakhstan, and this team has now announced that they will put in a bid for one of the seats in Formula One, or one of the franchises, I should say. So, Liberty Media loves money, so let's see how this thing goes. More money, part two, because it's never enough. More money from across the pond flowing into Formula One. Your team, Alpine Formula One team, has announced they have received just over $200 million for a 24% stake in the racing team, but does not include any stake in the engine operations at Viry-Châtillon in France. The new investors include Rob McElhenney, American writer, actor, producer, and podcaster. He is originally from Philadelphia, PA, as in Pennsylvania, and also Ryan Reynolds, Canadian-American actor, film producer, and businessman. He is originally from Vancouver, BC, as in British Columbia in O, Canada. What say you on this new money coming in, sir?
Well, the first thing I said is, who in the hell is Ryan Reynolds? These people mean nothing to me. I know nothing about them. In my tiny little world of motorsports, Nasser, these people have never been mentioned by you or anyone else. So please inform me on these motorsports gurus.
Well, you know, if you have money, you are a motorsport expert. And frankly speaking, I had also never heard of them because I don't watch daytime soap operas, and I would rather watch 1961 Italian Grand Prix than Days of Our Lives or Friends or Cheers. So, but to each his own. So these are new people to me also. It is interesting, you know, with all this money that is coming into Formula One from Middle East, USA, Canada, whatever, I think one thing it's going to do is it's going to make Michael Andretti's effort very hard to get into Formula One, which I am very, very disappointed because that's a very legendary motorsports name all over the world. And I would love to see Andretti, you know, he is now 84 years old and he loves Formula One like you won't believe. Every time I talk to him, I get the impression I'm talking to a 14-year-old who is going to his first Formula One race in the next 30 days. He's so excited and passionate about Formula One. So we'll see how that works out. Okay, sir, moving on. Nielsen numbers. Formula One has drawn three of its four largest live U.S. television audiences over the first races of 2023, according to ESPN. Sunday, which was like two Sundays ago, Canadian Grand Prix was watched live by an average of 1.76 million viewers in the USA. The Monaco Grand Prix had 1.79 million viewers, and the Miami race had 1.96. Now, the most people who watched was last year's Miami Grand Prix, and the numbers was 2.6 million. You know, I did not watch this or listen to it, but you mentioned this thing that done by Will Arnett and Daniel Ricciardo, that was watched by 114,000 people. Does that number surprise you? You think it's too low, or you're surprised over 100,000 people watched that, whatever it was?
Completely surprised. Not only that, but the problem is the data is flawed. We need to know how many people sustained the brutal punishment for the entire show, or they bailed out immediately after they heard the nonsense that had no connectivity to what was going on the screen. Bad data, zero people should have watched that because it was absolutely terrible. These people have no personality.
Daniel Ricciardo has no personality?
Not that night. I mean, he was one of the worst. Him and Patrick Dempsey, here at F1 Weekly, we demand chemistry and charisma. You and I have, Nasser. It's developed over the years, and it's incroyable. Those people have not done... It was like awkward moment at a Greyhound bus station. You saw somebody that you really didn't want them to see you at the Greyhound bus station. Thank you very much. I mean, they were not paying attention. They were having a conversation about family members and moms and dads while the race was going on behind them. And I'm going, you know, you're going, can anybody say something? It was so awkward that I quickly went back to Sky Sports with quality commentating because I wanted to understand what was going on. I mean, don't get me wrong. I'm sure these guys' lives are very interesting, but to me, it's F1 and F1 only.
Totally agree with you, sir. So basically what they did was like an ABC coverage of the Indy 500. Let's go to Sandy Andretti's Italian Kitchen, and then we will take you to Katie Guerrero's bathtub from Colombia.
Exactly. I'm sure that since I turned it off so quickly, but eventually in the show as it progressed, I'm sure the remodeling on Ricciardo's bathroom was mentioned, and of course, the new floor in Dempsey's garage. I'm sure all that came up, and maybe a listener could fill us in.
Okay, sir, next we come to Slip Sliding Away. Motor racing is not being kind to children of ex-Grand Prix drivers. Last year, Mick Schumacher was let go at Haas, and Gunther Steiner is still fuming about him. A few weeks ago, son of Derek Daly, Connor was released from his contract at Ed Carpenter Racing, and Ed is the stepson of that great messiah of motorsports, Tony George. Now, in the land of the rising sun, Alesi needs new motivation. Giuliano Alesi, that is. The bambino of Jean Alesi and his Japanese wife has been dropped by Tom's team, which has been a Toyota team for a long, long time. Like Roush in America is affiliated with Ford for many years. So he has been dropped from their Japanese Super Formula. I'm not saying this as an insult, but this is just based on performance. Giuliano never did anything in F2, but was part of Ferrari Driver Academy. He is a very polite kid. I met him in 2009 at the Abu Dhabi Grand Prix and had a brief chat with him. Very nice kid, I must say. Not wishing this, but based on performance or lack of it, I think next to go is Sebastian Montoya. He is a Red Bull Junior, and we all know patience is a very rare commodity at this abattoir. Now we come to IndyCar news, America's top open wheel series. Roger Penske paid a visit to Milwaukee Mile Track. They are trying to bring back the series to one of the oldest tracks in the country. For many years, the race was very popular and used to take place 1 week after the Indy 500. Michael Andretti was a serious hustler at this track. A driver, very famous driver, by the name of Ralph DePalma won the very first IndyCar race at this track way back in 1911. And of course, that's the year Indy 500 also started. Check this out, Mr. Rogers. In 1963, the race was won by a two-time world champion, or a chap who became two-time world champion, Jim Clark. And this is regarded as the first ever win in IndyCar racing by a rear-engine car. So pretty impressive there. Okay, sir, Bar Honda did look right, look left on their cars. Today we look forward to what's on the racing radar. This week, on Wednesday, I am invited to visit Toyota Gazoo Racing and their museum in Cologne, Germany. Then I am headed to the hills of Austria for a few days. Time and circumstances will dictate if I will hear the sound of motor racing at the Red Bull Ring. There's a chance I may go, but I'll make that decision, I think, on Thursday. I am now beyond John Lennon's song when I am 64 and just don't have the energy to do a baton march to watch a motor race. And, sir, which brings me to a very interesting conversation I had at Monza on Sunday. I met a gentleman whom I've known for many years. Him and his buddy, they run a driver management program, and they've been doing it for many years. This chap I met is from Belgium. and his partner is from Portugal. And so we were talking, and I mentioned to him that, you know, I was hoping to get Formula 2 credentials. Did not work out. Formula 1 is out of the question. And he said to me, next time you come to a race, let me know. I may be able to help you out in another way. And I have an idea what he was saying. So hopefully all is not lost for F1 Weekly for access to Formula 2. Formula 1 still will be very hard, but we will try every few months and see. We'll try to wear them down. We'll see what happens. What say you?
Ladies and gentlemen, we are so tiny on the radar. We are so minuscule that we are mocked. And they just don't realize how wonderful we really are. And they won't even look at our pedigree, Nasser. Imagine that.
Yes, sir. Okay, sir, before we go into Mondial, shall we do interview now, second interview, or when they come back?
Why don't we spin the globe, have a glass of Perrier by Orson Welles, then we'll do the interview. So we'll be back after this brief message.
Deep below the plains of southern France, in a mysterious process begun millions of years ago, nature herself adds life to the icy waters of a single spring, Perrier. Its natural sparkle is more delicate than any made by man, and therefore more quenching, more refreshing, and the mixer par excellence, naturally sparkling from the center of the earth, Perrier.
Welcome back to F1Weekly.com. Clark Rogers here, your host. And now, as we spin the globe and go around the world with Motorsports Mondial and the king, the Swami himself, Nasser Hamid.
Thank you, sir. And we shall start the Mondial with the second of our two interviews today. And this is with Arvid Lindblad. Like I said, he is from England, leading the championship, had a great weekend in Monza. Over the weekend, he won all three races. Also was very successful in karting. So I see a bright future for him. Nice young kid. And hopefully we will talk to him soon. And please enjoy the conversation.
Okay, folks, I'm here at Parco Monza with young, talented Red Bull Junior, Mr. Arvid Lindblad. Arvid, good to meet you. How are you today?
Good, good. How are you?
Very good, thanks. How is the weekend going for you so far?
It's going well so far. We've had strong pace from the beginning in FP1, FP2, and then quali went well. I was P3 in Q1, and then P1 in Q2, so I started P2 due to a penalty, P2 race 1, and then at pole position for race 2 and 3.
Cool. 5-year-old kid, you went to a go-kart for the first time at Rye House. What do you remember most from that day? Was it love at first sight with motorsports?
Yeah, well, I remember it was a long time ago. I think it was actually another track at Buckmore Park, it was called. And I saw the first time like these rental carts, but yeah, I remember I drove for the first time. It was just like a small oval, and I really enjoyed it. It was great fun, and yeah, like you said, it was basically love at first sight.
Getting up to speed in karting, was it easy for you? Came naturally, or it took some time?
No, in the beginning, I drove in Bambinos, was called, which was good fun. It was just me and my dad. We'd go around in a van, and it was good fun, and it was going well. And then I quickly moved up to cadets at 7, and we joined a team. And yeah, but it went quite early on. It started going well. Yeah.
And your interest in motorsports come from your dad and your grandfather?
Yeah, from my dad's side of the family. My granddad, he's a real motorsport addict. He loves it. And he sort of passed that into my dad and through to me.
Okay. At age 11, you were British karting champion. Do you remember highlights of your season?
Yeah, I remember that year well. That was sort of, yeah, that was my first success, really. It was a really eventful year and challenging, but yeah, I remember it was a really good year. I won the British Championship and LGM that year, and yeah, it was really amazing experience that.
When you moved into European competition, what was your first impression of depth of competition on the continent as compared to racing just in England?
Yeah, it was very different. Obviously, the level was a lot higher, competing with sort of the best from everywhere in the world. That made it very challenging. And then also, it was just completely different tracks. You know, the there's more power in the carts, a lot more rubber, so I had to change different driving style. The tracks are a lot bigger, more open. So yeah, there was a lot of, in the beginning, there was a lot of learning and a lot of adapting I had to do. But I quickly, you know, I caught up to speed, I got used to it, and yeah, it went well sort of from the beginning when I started racing.
Last year in karting, you had an accident, I believe, at Franciacorta in Italy. Can you give us some background as to what happened and how quickly you were able to get back to racing?
Yeah, no, it was just an incident with another driver. It was unfortunate. It wasn't anything malicious, but yeah, it was just one of those incidents. And I got touched and flipped a few times in the cart, and I was in hospital. I recovered much quicker than expected because it was quite a severe fracture. I'd broke my metacarpal and my thumb in multiple places. But within about 5-6 weeks, I was out driving again, competing in the European Championship, and it was, a minor setback, you could say, but I definitely think I came out a bit stronger.
Second half of last year, you took part in some Italian Formula 4 races with Van Amersfoort Racing. How long it took you to feel comfortable switching from go-karts to single-seaters?
Yeah, it was definitely a very big step. It was completely different, you know, it's completely different to karting. Much bigger tracks, you know, more power, you know, it's just, yeah, it's completely different. In the beginning, it did take me a while to get used to. I had to change the way I drove and also just adapt to, you know, driving a car. But it was great fun immediately from the beginning. I loved it. I loved the speed. And it was great fun. I wasn't as well prepared for my first race as I wanted to be, so I didn't perform as well as I wanted last year, but I feel like I really learned a lot, and I went into this season, you know, well prepared, and it was a good experience.
Both in karting and in single-seater racing, have you ever worked with a driver coach or just done things on your own?
I have a trainer with me. He comes to most races. At home, you know, we do mental preparation and physical preparation, and then, you know, when he's here, we work on stuff. But normally he's been coming with me sort of since we started working together in 2021, and it's been really going really well so far. He's called Sam Village, and yeah, he's been really good. So he comes to most races. But I don't really have anyone else other than him.
Okay. You have the same date of birth as Nigel Mansell. Have you ever met him?
No, I haven't. I remember I was curious a few years ago who I shared a birthday with, and I saw I shared with Nigel Mansell, which is quite cool. A bit of history, but no, I've never met him, but I would love to in the future. He's a racing legend.
Speaking of him, do you have any racing heroes or drivers you looked up to as you were climbing the racing ladder in your karting days or even now?
Obviously, we sort of... You know, we're all aspiring to get to Formula One, so we idolise quite a few of the drivers there. From a young age, I was always like Lewis Hamilton from quite young, just because he was English, and yeah, I found him quite relatable. Recently, I've started to also like Max, you know, with Red Bull and stuff. I've got to meet him and know him a bit. But yeah, I'd sort of say those two are my two main heroes, and then also sort of Senna. I think sort of the things he achieved, he was such a racing legend. Yeah, those three.
Speaking of Senna, I'm a huge fan of Senna. Have you ever seen his first victory in Portugal, 1985?
No, but I've watched sort of... I've seen a little bit about it. To be honest, I don't remember the full story, but I remember he was driving, I think, Lotus at the time. And to be honest, I don't really remember what happened, but I remember, yeah, he was... I think it was Harry Rain, was it?
Yeah. If you ever get a chance on YouTube, the performance was unbelievable. Okay, talking of Red Bull, can you tell us how you got into the Red Bull program? Did you get a call from Dr. Marco, or did you send him a text message saying, hey, look at me, I'm jolly good?
Yeah, it was kind of, we knew a few people who were quite close with Helmut, and... to be honest, yeah, they'd spoken a bit about me to him, and then I remember me and my dad one day were in Portimao in the hotel, and Helmut gave my dad a call and said he wanted me to come and have a meeting. We met him on the Sunday morning of the Portuguese Grand Prix in 2020, and he basically said he wanted to sign me to the program, and it kind of started from there.
You know, one thing I want to know, when you're in a program like Red Bull or any other team, as a driver, do you get to say where you want to race or which team, or everything is decided by them?
To be honest, I haven't really... In karting, they weren't very involved. And in cars, we haven't really worked together so long. Like, it's my first year, so I can't... fully comment, but I think that, you know, Helmut makes up, I think, you know, he's the boss, so he decides a lot of it. Maybe there is a little bit of leeway for discussion, but at the end of the day, yeah, I think he's the boss and he decides what he thinks is best.
You are definitely, I've been following your career from your karting days. You are one of the hot favorites for the championship. Who do you see as your main challengers?
This year, I think, you know, I've got really strong teammates, Ugo, James, Tuka, they're all fast, and then also sort of Badua, Invar and Stuka, they're also strong, but at the moment it's going well. I think sort of it's just going to be about consistency now to the end of the year.
We do a program from California, USA. Do you follow American racing scene at all?
In US?
Yeah, like IndyCars, NASCAR.
To be honest, not really. I've started to get a little bit into IndyCar, but I've never watched NASCAR or anything else.
Okay. Finally, how about a message for our listeners? You can tell them about your website, your social media.
Yeah, I've got Instagram, Arvid Lindblad. It's my account.
I wish you all the best, and thank you so much.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
Arvid, thanks for joining F1Weekly.com. Nasser?
Okay, moving on, we had a rally that sparked my interest in motorsports, the Safari Rally, previously known as East African Safari, which used to be run through Kenya, Uganda, and Tanzania. Now it's just the Kenyan show. Stevie Wonder was doing part-time lover. Your French man, friend, or fellow paisan, Sébastien Ogier, is doing part-time racer. The 8-time World Rally Champion is racing part-time this season and is doing extremely well. He has won 3 of the 5 events he entered so far this season. And interestingly, he races for Toyota and they took the top 4 places. Second was Kalle Rovanpera of Finlandia. Third was Elvin Evans from Wales, same place as Tom Price and Tom Jones. It's not unusual to go out at any time. Japanese driver Takamoto Katsuta was 4th. The win was Ogier's 3rd from 5 starts so far this season. So this is going very well for him. Sir, I remember when Loeb was winning, you had invented a new term, Loebed. Who do you think is better, Sebastien Ogier or Sebastien Loeb?
Well, Sebastien Ogier is a little bit younger. Sebastien Loeb definitely is the king.
So he's machismo.
Super machismo.
There you go. Okay, next we come to MotoGP. They were in action at Assen in the Netherlands. Winner was Pecco Bagnaia with paisan Marco Bezzecchi second, both on Ducatis. Marco won Saturday's sprint race. Marquez again did not take part in the race. Reports are he may say sayonara to Honda. And shout out goes out to F1 Weekly Familia members who were at the race, Louis and Didi. And if you don't mind, please share some photos so we can put them on F1 Weekly web page. And Mr. Rogers, due to travel, I could not watch the IMSA Watkins Glen. You sent me a text message a la Pedro that Porsche won, but looks like now they have lost the win.
That is correct. I believe BMW has taken the win, but I do not have the details. But I just got a flash news story that Honda is making a U-turn with Aston Martin F1 engine deal.
And canceling the deal?
I don't know. Just flashed in front of my eyes. I was shocked. And maybe it has to do with GP2 engine.
Which website is reporting this?
Your favorite, Motorsport.
Motorsport.com?
Correcto.
Wonder what happened.
This is live on the air, ladies and gentlemen.
We shall find out more soon.
See.
Okay, sir. Now we come to famous last words. With Checo's championship challenge fading away, Max is on cruise control towards his 3rd successive title. The one and only Dr. Helmut Marko had this to say to Swiss publication Blake after the recent Canadian Grand Prix. I quote, "Somehow the boys have to be ashamed. The only two who can tickle Verstappen's nerves are over 80 years old between them." End quote. Well said by the 80-year-old doctor of jurisprudence. As we all know, he is referring to machismo and lucky Luciano Uno, now that we have 2. And sir, with that we come to Musical Mondial. Today we are recording from Italia, so why not have some music from this place that gave us beautiful places like Parco Monza, Imola, and Vallelunga, located near Roma. Here is the maestro himself, Signor Ennio Morricone with theme from Come Maddalena, one of my favorites. Grazie for listening and please enjoy.